Welcome everyone back to the Spocast. Johnny Cashmere here, Bruce Wayne attire again. It's got big 80s in here. What's up, Donnie?
Hello, brother. How are you?
Good to see you, brother.
You too, my friend.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was cool, bro. We went with the in-laws. It was a great weekend. We gathered with the in-laws as we usually do. Extended family. It was awesome. Great times. I never take those for granted. The following night, we hit one of my favorite haunts down here in Ocean County. It's the Old Causeway in Manahawkin. A great restaurant. Real good friends of ours. We went to dinner with them, Lion and Michelle. Lifelong friends. And then Saturday night, dude, it was awesome. We actually went down to Wildwood, New Jersey. We made the trek from Ocean County. Yes, there was eight of us. We all piled in the car. We said, screw it, let's go. And we actually went to the Wildwood Honky Tonk Bar. They have a new bar that opened in Wildwood. It's a honky tonk country bar with a whole Western country theme. It was awesome, dude. It was cool as hell. Decorated for Christmas. Great atmosphere. It was kind of dead. There was really no house, I guess, because it was cold out. And I thought there would be because of Thanksgiving weekend. Yeah, they're really hopping, they said, from May till right around end of September. That's how Wildwood is, though. It always dies in the winter. But really cool establishment, man. We had a great time. We hung out there for like 5 hours. We country line danced. We hung out. It was just great, dude. Just a really cool, fun, inexpensive weekend. I mean, you don't need to spend $5,000 every weekend, but it was great, dude. Good times.
Good. I'm glad, yeah. Brother.
Yeah, buddy.
Sounds good. So we have a special guest here tonight.
Who is
Tommy
it?
Grayson is not with us tonight. He's on tour. He's actually in Detroit right now or traveling. Both back seats are, so they will not be here tonight. Phil will be joining us in a little bit as soon as he gets back to his house. And we have a special guest filling in this week. We're going to tell some old stories. Ladies and gentlemen, referee Brian Logan. What's up, brother?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Gee.
Thanks. Thanks for coming on, man. We appreciate having you. It's always great when Gee's here.
Well, yeah, especially when you can't get anybody else. It's like, oh, I'll show up.
For those of you that are listening, that can't see, the background of Brian Logan's picture right now is a beautiful granddaddy piano and a fireplace. I would sooner expect to see Sasquatch in that corner. It'd be more believable. Well, than
if, you can, if you can't all the way around, you would.
Yeah, him playing that piano. There's zero chance you have musical ability. None. Zero.
Nah, I can turn the radio on. Donnie,
yes. You're forgetting. Picture a young redheaded Gee sitting at that bench with his mother with a ruler hitting his hands every time he messes up a note. Now that you can see.
That's because he was distracted by his large rubber LJN figures that were in the corner.
I never had LJN figures. I didn't like them. I thought the G.I. Joes were better wrestlers. They moved better.
They were. No,
there you
Brian,
go, ladies and gentlemen.
Yo, truer words have never been spoken on the Spocast. The G.I. Joes were better wrestlers than the LJNs.
It's true.
We've got to admit this.
Mark. Yeah,
we've got to admit this. I got something special to show you guys. Last time you were here, Brian, I promised we would show our touch of greatness, our brush with greatness, you and me from Cage of Death. The spear heard round the world. Let's show it.
Junior heavyweight champion, we can all be proud of. Leave the referee alone. No!
Don't go!
Yes! My God! Here comes Brian Logan. What the hell is he doing? A spear by Brian Logan. He's had enough of Cashmere, and so have I.
He's a referee.
You see how he books himself, Donnie?
Always awesome when the referee is a better worker and does a better spot than anybody in the match. That definitely sells.
Hartog got hurt from that ladder spot. He was like messed up the rest of the night over that.
Stop
you guys,
that.
You guys want a full disclosure for a second?
The ladder.
I never saw that. So, Johnny, I never saw that before. I thought the guy in the black shirt was Brian Logan. I didn't know he was like, I didn't know the deal. I had no idea what you guys were doing.
That was Hartog. So
but I didn't see his face. I'm like, wow, he really lost a lot of weight since then. And then I said, oh, okay, that's him in the yellow shirt, the piss mustard shirt that I always hated.
Now,
but
that was over.
Yeah, it was. Way over. So
the piss
over,
mustard
under.
Shirt.
It's over.
Yep.
But Brian, honestly, in retrospect, Donnie, you'll agree, I should have also been speared onto the ladder. Agreed?
No.
Absolutely. Gee, was that an audible?
No.
Was that an audible? Because,
we didn't know that the ladder was still going to be laying there after Hartog hit it.
I wouldn't want to show up any of the workers. And to me, that's me showing up to workers. You don't think so?
No one in that locker room cared.
No, you. Like, I didn't want to look like I would be able to do that to you. Like, I was lucky there is how I wanted to look.
You actually spun me around. Like, I landed on my head. I'm going to watch
the
this again.
The bump was John. Yeah, let me see that
watch the spear itself.
Here comes Brian Logan.
Watch me spin.
What the hell is he doing? A spear by Brian Logan.
Like, it literally landed on Brian's head.
No. I'll give credit where it's due. If you watch that carefully, when Gi starts to spin, he does so in a manner that he can kind of land flat on his back without you landing on his head. That may have been – mark the date and time of that, because I think that's the single most athletic thing he ever did in the entire
life. You never saw the flip spot then.
No, I don't need that's to. True. It's not better than that. Oh.
Wait a minute. How about the time, Donnie B, that you grabbed Brian Logan and threw him over the top rope at Steve Corino's show, and he took that real stiff bump to the outside?
It was easy. I was trained to take that bump, though.
I didn't care.
Yeah, but that was pretty impressive bump, though. It was basically like getting eliminated. You basically got eliminated from the Royal Rumble.
Gi was a good bumper. He was a good bumping ref. I appreciate it,
but all that bump is a cartwheel. That's all that it is. It looks more impressive.
But I always thought when Gi, if there was a finish and Gi had a bump, if the ref had to take a bump, I could always count on Gi's being believable looking.
Oh, yeah.
Not that he got touched through the feather. Yeah, I always thought that was fine. Yeah. Like Keener. Keener was the same way. If you bumped Keener, like I've said, Keener's got to take a bump and stay down. I always thought he was good. I always thought Gi was good.
Keener was great. The only time I ever took a choke slam was from, rest in peace, Jerry Tutti choke slamming through a table on one of your shows.
The wall.
That's right.
Off. Was that
what show was that? I remember that. Was that
Point Pleasant? Eddie Guerrero on that?
Cara? It must have been. I might have been Point Pleasant, the DDP show in Point Pleasant. I don't know.
I remember he did it, and then they went to pull me. Keener's like, no. Do not drag him off that table. Pick him up because you're going to scrape his arms all that. He led, like he said, he made sure they didn't make it worse. Pick him because I was selling the table for him.
Yeah.
So don't drag him. You get all cut up.
I can guarantee Jerry got you up with no problem.
Yeah.
Jerry was one of the strongest human beings I ever saw in my life.
Powerhouse.
One of the nicest, too.
Yeah. And kind of quiet, I thought. Like, I didn't like.
He
like,
was quiet except when the demons would creep in.
Okay.
I've told this story, but I love Jerry. The last time I ever talked to him was probably around 3 or 4 months before he passed. He had called me out of the blue and he said, hey man, you got any shows coming up? I said, well, I got one coming up and this and that. And he wasn't clean, dude. He couldn't get clean. And I love Jerry, but he was begging me for money saying he needed for a car payment. And I said, dude,
this
I'll tell
the
you
wall,
what,
by the way, people might not know who you're talking about. He was
Jerry
the
wall
in
wall.
WCW.
Yes. And I said to him, tell me the name of the bank. I'll write the check and I'll pay you next 6 months for your car payment. That's what I said to him. It was $180. He wanted $180. And I said, dude, I'll make the next 6 months for your car payment. And he went back and forth. He said, I'll call you back. And he called me back. He goes, no, I need the cash today. They're going to take my car. I said, Jerry, I'll bring the money. Just tell me who to hand it to. He's just give me the money. Like, and I was like, oh, shit, dude. And I said, I can't. Yeah, I said, I can't help you, bro. And then a few months later, I got a call from Devin Storm at like 6 a.m. one morning. And he said, hey, Jerry passed away in Japan. And that was that. And we went to his funeral.
Anytime the phone rings that time of day, it's almost always bad news.
It was a thing for like 4 or 5 years. Devin would be the one to call me for whatever reason. Like, you know, I would see the phone and say Devin Storm, and I'd be like, oh, shit. Who died? I remember picking up the phone once. I go, who is it? And he told me.
Right.
I was like, oh, all right.
It got to the point where it was almost someone every week.
Yeah. You're not kidding. And it just kept getting closer and closer. And just up until 2 years ago. Max Smack, Billy Real, Z-Bar, Justice Payne, all these, it's a plague. And so many of them, Brian, were with us.
It is, but it's.
Well,
we don't want to get too dark here, but you got to have something.
No.
When your time is up, you got to have something else lined up. Your family, your garden, your golf, you have to have something else.
I think you're right.
Nothing left. It's just, it makes it worse because you're surrounded. You're surrounded in old times and old feelings, and you're like, it's just, it's sad. I mean, it's wiped out. It's really sad.
A lot of these people, I don't mean to step in, but a lot of these individuals, they, when they're done wrestling and the spotlight fades a little bit, they think that that's the high point of their life. And since they're not going to achieve anything other than life higher than being on Monday Night Raw or WrestleMania, they're thinking to themselves, why don't I just check out? I guarantee you that's what's running through most of their heads. So the most important thing they can do with this NIL or NXT talent or any young talent out there, when they first get signed, have them with a crash course of life after wrestling. I know Nova was preaching that. He tried to get it going in developmental when he was the head of developmental, and they literally called him. He had it all ready to go. The program was going to launch, and he got a call from a certain individual and said, this comes from the top. You can't do this. They did not want the talent smartened up because it was that old slave driver mentality. The more the talent was smart and less dependent on the master, then the more obedient they'd be.
I'm actually surprised you say that because I don't follow the business anywhere near like I did.
But that's, you got to remember, Brian, that's 25 years ago. Not now. Now they're all for it.
Right. The guys are smarter. They're more educated. It's a different type of person that gets into the business now than it was 30 years ago.
And now he had just done, Mike just did I think last 6-7 months ago, last season, whatever it was, down in Ohio Valley, did financial literacy and life after wrestling for all those guys down there. Like once every month or every two weeks, whatever it was, he did a class through Al Snow.
I was just going to say, I could see Al Snow doing something like that.
Yeah, Al brought Mike into it. So, I mean, I think that was one of the most important things you could do is prepare these guys for a shelf life of maybe 3 to 5 years. I don't think these careers of 10, 15, 20 years are happening anymore, like the Randy Ortons and all that. No. God bless them if they do. You might get one or two, like Seth or Kevin Owens and this and that a hell of a run. But from, you know, infancy all the way to old age in the wrestling world, like if you get picked up in NFC or NXT and make it all the way to the main roster, I think these maybe 5 years, six,
I would
maybe
say that's
10.
I mean,
yeah, I mean, there'll be a few that slip through the cracks, but for most of these people, they're going to get picked up, have all the dreams right in front of them and all the things to look forward to. And it's going to last maybe a year or two, maybe three. And then they're going to be out on their ass and not know what to do with their lives. So I think, you know, hopefully they can save some of the money they have and go to do something else or whatever it is. But it's kind of sad in a way. It's like any other profession. What are you going to do?
You know what I say, guys? I say it's like the flag philosophy where you have a flag, but it's limp. There's not enough wind to make the flag show and wave. Yeah. And I feel like that's a wrestler when he leaves the wrestling business. There's nothing in real life that provides enough wind to really show off your flag.
Kind of like leaving the circus.
Yeah. I'm almost positive it was Al. Might have been Al Snow. It might have been, I think it was Al, but I remember somebody saying, I'm almost positive it was Al, who said, the day you become a full-time contracted professional wrestler, the very first day, you have to start planning for the last day. And I thought that was genius. I really did. I was like, wow, so many of these guys get hired, and it's going to end, it's going to go forever. Like the gravy train is going to last forever. But that was one of the smartest things I ever heard, that the day you get hired is the day you have to start.
I can see Al being that way almost no matter what he did for a living. Whether he's a contract painter, a wrestler, or a belly dancer.
And I know he's doing the Ohio Valley thing, and that's awesome, dude. He's really made that into nothing out of something out of nothing. But I don't know, dude. I just got to envision, like, how the hell can, like, AEW or WWE, anybody not have somebody like that, like, under their tent and just doing the same thing for them? I don't get it. I don't know.
Whatever. That company, I would imagine, WWE now is, without Vince there, I mean, God knows the changes you're going to see. But until there's a union of some kind, something to protect these guys, you're on your own. And it's,
you think if Vince McMahon was there, there would be any kind of lifeline or assistance to the independents like there is now, this ID thing? Hell no. Triple H was on the other night saying, this is a lifeline to the independents. We're going to financially support these guys and get the next group who's underneath the group that's coming up. He's smart enough to know that the pond has to be restocked constantly with new fish.
Well, not only that, here's something a lot of people realize. Triple H worked the indies.
Absolutely did. He was managed by Johnny Rodeo up in Boston.
Know that. Him and Perry Saturn were the tag champions for Kowalski's Fed. I'm not saying he had a long run on there, but Triple H lived on the road, worked at a time, didn't have any money, slept in his car. And until like guys go through that, I mean, it gets taken for granted. Like these guys now, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but Donnie, most of the guys, like even guys like Raven, like ECW has only had what, Raven, maybe Terry Funk, obviously Shane Douglas, guys that worked the road circuit that didn't make a lot of money for 4 to 5 years before they even got looked at by somebody. There's this whole education and building process that takes place before you even get it booked anywhere. And
I see that, but then at the same time, you go, like a big boom AJ, the Costco guy. He just came, you know what I mean? He came in and lit it up. So it's like, who's to say if you have to do the 4 or 5 year grind now, could you just be an NIL athlete?
I'm just saying, I'd say that it makes a difference in the worker.
I think, and this is just my own opinion, to draw from all those roads is the way to go, whether it's NIL athletes or indie guys or just athletes that you pluck out of nowhere, like Bianca Belair. She was a fitness person that Mark Henry saw in a video and called her and said, hey, you ever think about wrestling? She's like, who's this? And he's like, Mark Henry. He was the one who brought her in and vouched for her. Like Tiffany Stratton was a gymnast. So, I mean, just that kind of shit. Yeah. So you never know, man. You never know.
No, you never know. But also, WWE's at the position now, and has been for decades, where they can afford to waste money on people. They almost needed no audience and have someone go in there and just lay on the mat and sleep, and they're still going to make money.
Like I said, look at it this way with this WWE ID thing. I believe I heard it's $500 a week these guys get. Does anybody know if that's true? The indie guys, that's what they're getting?
I didn't know.
Their supplement pay. I don't know. I read that somewhere. And
that's phenomenal.
If it's true, I have no idea if that is true. But let's say that is true. That's how much a year? $500 a week, $25,000 a year.
Yeah.
So for $25,000 a year, if you had 10 of those people, that's $250,000 a year, right? Mm-hmm. So $250,000 a year. If you one of those people even semi worked out and you could get a return of investment on them and make a couple $1 million on that individual through tickets or revenue and merchandise, it's definitely worth it. Because where else are you going to get them?
Right.
Well, so then you'd think by that logic they would continue tough enough.
No.
Why? I don't think so. I agree. No. But you're right. Because this is kind of like a different bird. The tough enough thing, that was more of a marketing ploy, I think. Like when those reality TV shit was big and all that. I think people would just poop on that and be like, this sucks. Like, I mean, that's my own opinion.
We did get a lot of good talent from it, though, is what I was trying to say. We did get some good talent from that, at least. So what I'm saying is, whatever the production cost of the show was, it might be worthwhile.
You could probably bring it back in some fashion if you retooled it. You could bring anything back. It depends how much they want to do it. But again, when you're breaking record after record like they are now, why fiddle with it too much? They're about to go to Netflix. I mean, which is going to expose,
as long as the Netflix servers hold up and there's no,
they'll be fine. Well, how many, was it 66 million people that watched that? Was that right? The Tyson deal? And Triple H said, listen, if there's 66 million people watching us the first week of Raw, I'll be fine if there's a few glitches. Cause what does Raw get on Monday nights? 2 million, something like that. I don't even know.
But you have to admit this. People that say whatever they want about wrestling, no one puts on a better high-tech, better-looking show than WWE. The lights.
WWE is the best-produced entertainment in the world.
Hollywood, I think. Their shows look incredible.
It's without question. It's a modern-day Barnum & Bailey circus. It's the most highly produced live-action troupe in the world. And it has been for the last 30 years. What else rivals it? Circus Olay or... Yeah.
Which was all under the same house now. UFC and WWE under the same house now.
There's not many traveling arena acts left in the United States.
No. You got some country. You got your rock and roll and your country people and all that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about concerts. Exactly. The future is at Dome in Vegas. That's what they're going to do. That you don't think that was an accident. That's a test right there. They're trying to test it and see if we can build some kind of dome like the one in Vegas with only seats about 1,000 people, I think. Is that right? I don't even know.
It's not a huge building. No.
So let's say you do that and you go, you know what? Instead of $500 for a front row seat, we're going to charge $5,000.
Yeah. The old Manhattan Center. The old Manhattan Center logic.
Yeah. That's all Manhattan. The Hammerstein. AEW is coming to the Hammerstein in for 3 nights in a row.
I saw.
In December, dude. I saw. God bless them.
What do you think of that, Donnie? What's your take on how they're doing? What their vision is? If they have
My vision is they just need to stay the course. Need to tighten some stuff up, come back to a little more reality-based stuff, get rid of some of the nonsense, trim that roster a little bit.
What are we talking about?
AEW. Get rid of some guys who are just never going to draw money, and that's no offense to them, but I don't know, man. I think they have all the tools in place. I think Tony needs more believers than employees. He's got a ton of employees. He's got people all around him. He needs some more people to help carry the water of his vision. And just be like, hey, man, we believe in you, and we know we'll get this done. That's my opinion.
You know, Brian, I don't know if you know it or not. Donnie was at the AEW pay-per-view last week because did you hear him say about AJ Big Boom? Do you know who he means when he says that, Brian? No, right?
Negative.
All right. Do you remember when Donnie used to run, there was a guy in his locker room named Tundra?
No.
The power child. Him, the power child of the Arctic Tundra. If you talked to him, you'd remember him. 100%.
Eric Justice, the power child. Yes.
They're the biggest things in TikTok right now on the internet. Okay. By far. The Costco guys.
Okay, I remember you talking about that in the last one podcast we did.
They're literally the biggest thing in the country.
It's maybe crazy. The world
at this point on social media. They were on the Tonight Show, bro, about a month ago. The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. So that tells you how big they are. But I went to the AEW pay-per-view. I brought my wife and daughters. We were gracious enough to be allowed in. It was awesome. We were up in the box suite with the Welch's family. Welch's grape, Welch's jelly, Welch's snacks, the Welch family. They're friends with AJ and all them. So we were in their box. But I did go in the back. It was a great time. Saw some old friends. Was super blown away and impressed with the production. I did not see any malfeasance. I did not see any miscontent people or anything like that. No heat. Nobody arguing. I saw a group, a merry band of brothers and sisters working together hard to put on a good product. That's what I saw. You know, you always hear all these malcontents on social media. Oh, AEW's a shit. So there's all this heat. This bullshit. I was there. I saw it firsthand. I didn't see a single negative person walking around. Everybody could not have been more hospitable and kind and nice. And what I really noticed is how supportive they were of each other. When guys were coming back after their matches, they were high-fiving each other and saying that was awesome or this was cool. And just like, that's what I saw. I saw guys coming up to each other in the locker room afterward, like after their matches, and out of the corner of my eye, like, hugging them and saying, bro, that was great, and this and that. It was very refreshing to see that. I saw no heat. Yep.
You know what it is, Donnie, too? And I was saying this recently to someone. We're not in a sport. This is show business. So this isn't art. So if you go up to a wrestler after his match and say, yo, man, that was some good shit out there, you know? Like, you're basically telling a painter you admire his art that's hanging on the wall, you know?
And I told you last week, a former AEW champion, I told you off air, went up to Andrew at Big Boom AJ at the end of the night and said, thank you for the house, brother, because he realized what Andrew meant to the show.
But you see right there, what he just put over, I think is lost today.
Yep.
There's a difference between being over and being a draw. There's a difference between selling tickets and putting on a great match. And I just see the AEW mindset is, it's like New Japan watered down in the States is going to, like, work doesn't draw. Work is like the icing on the cake. You have to have the cake to have the icing on it. It's just, there's people that like both, but I think they've, it almost reminds you of Ring of Honor with a bigger budget with the way they started. They took all those low spots out of the show. You can't have every match be, you know, maybe you can. It's just, you can't go, all the matches look the same to me. They all look the same. The talent looks all the same. The spot look all the same. I mean, some people like that. To me, it's almost
That's what was so refreshing. Yep, that's what was so refreshing about AJ's match against QT Marshall. And everybody, dude, if you universally lauded, like Meltzer put it over, said it was a home run. Cornette talked about it this week on his podcast. And he even had to say it was so different. It was actually, like Brian Last even said, it was great. It was good.
They put it over.
He did. I listened to it. And Cornette said it was a county fair match. And he said, I don't mean, like, that's not a bad thing. It was a county fair match, babyface and heel. And even Brian Last said, next to Will Ospreay, Big Boom AJ was the second most over person on the show. You know, the only thing they did compliment, a lot of people said they couldn't understand why it wasn't on the main broadcast. It should have been on the main. And, well, I'm not talking out of school here, but the reason it wasn't, Andrew didn't want it to be. He didn't want to take a spot from somebody who earned it on the pay-per-view.
They're not, like we said, they're not behind a PayPal platform. So to put them on a free pre-show makes so much more sense because one pays
because then
to
you're
see
gonna
them
pay to see correct. And then you'll say, wait a minute, this was cool. Let me buy the pay-per-view.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Now, maybe something could have happened at the end of the match where the match didn't have a finish, and they say, well, these guys need to go rest for an hour.
Yeah.
They'll finish the match on the pay-per-view. That might be neat.
Contractually, I have no idea what was involved in that, like where it's going to lead or anything else. I talked about that last time. That's totally up in the air. I'll say nothing, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see the Costco guys again in pro wrestling. I'll just
is there actually pay-per-view still now, or is it all a subscription model? Like,
you can they have pay-per-view still now, but it's I wouldn't even know how to order it. WWE, yeah, I think
I get cable in like 15 years, so I wouldn't know how to order either.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I think it's Peacock is WWE. I don't know how to watch.
Just think about what you just said right there. Pay-per-view was everything in our 20s. Now pay-per-view is, huh? What? Like, I wouldn't even know how to order it.
On Triller.
Yeah, much time. It shows you how much has changed in that time period. Just how the business has changed and how we absorb the product is different.
Right. Right. It's changed completely, Brian. And, you know, watching that, you watched the Vince McMahon documentary, right?
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed with that. But, yeah, I watched.
I was, too.
See, I wasn't. And I'll tell you why. Because having it chronicled in a timeline like that in front of you in a couple hours, rather than living through it in 20 years, it brought a lot of things to the forefront that I didn't place enough value on when it happened. Like,
what do you mean?
Like, I mean, I think me as a human being was like mad at the world, and WWE and wrestling was like the bastard son of showbiz. You could have a chip on your shoulder and fit in as a wrestling fan. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. I just think that what they put out there was nothing new in any of that. Like, there was all, like, I thought, but then again, I thought, why would they put something? They're not going to, I got it as they're trying to distance themselves from him in some way.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But what I'm saying is the depravity that was going on right in front of our faces, we should have put two and two together the whole time and realized that he was really weird the whole time. It shouldn't have taken us until 2024 to realize that he was a depraved man, is what I'm saying.
Well, I'm just saying it didn't even surprise me. I'm like, I would be surprised if he didn't do something like that.
Right.
Well, think about it. Think about a billionaire living in your own bubble where he gives people shit for sneezing and to be taking gas at 70 some years old and to, like, wanting to have your daughter's birth be put on Monday Night Raw. Like, you figure he's living in a world where no one says no.
Right.
No one says, that was a bad idea.
Right. And after a while, you lose touch with reality. It's the Emperor's New Clothes. You know the story of the Emperor's New Clothes, right?
Right. To me, the real story is why him and Linda got divorced. God, there's probably a million gag words, but the real story is the breakup. And it's
she's still going to be put in Trump's. He's going to put her back in power of some kind.
Oh, yeah, she's the head of small business.
Yeah, no, right. Education, Department of Education.
Oh, it's education now. The last time was that she ran the administration for small businesses. What small business she ran, I don't know.
No, I have no idea.
She had a checking account.
And now Shane's looking for a place to go. I guess he's man with no country, except his bank account. Shane McMahon? Yeah, think about it. Your dad is the most heated guy in the business. Your sister, everybody's left. Hunter, I guess, is running it, but isn't the owner. I mean, Shane reminds me of Hogan's kid. Remember when we used to watch that show? Like, Hogan's kid's going to be the screw up of the bunch because he doesn't have a role.
No, you're painting. No, Shane McMahon, I met Shane twice. That was it. But Mike actually knew him. And he's gone on record and said Shane McMahon was the most normal. Next to Linda was the most normal and nicest and down to earth out of all of them. And if you watch that documentary, you can see that the only thing Shane McMahon ever wanted his entire life was his dad's approval and love.
Sure.
That was it. That's the only reason he ever got in the business. That's the reason he stayed in it. He just wanted, and there was one part in that documentary where he said, like, after the Mania match, I think it was, his dad hugged him and said he was proud of him. And Shane was like, that's what I was looking for my whole life. And I think now, after getting that, he can separate himself and say that the family I'm making is more important than the one I came from. And just for the good of his wife and his children and everything else, I don't know what kind of interaction he has with Vince on a day-to-day. I really don't. I'd be surprised.
Funny you mentioned that, because I remember Vince himself saying the same thing about his father.
Yeah, it was a vicious cycle. And I could almost guarantee that Shane was damned if he would repeat it. Sure. Vince did to Shane what Vince's dad did to him. That's exactly what happened, man.
I just thought that documentary, like there's Vince and this horrible upbringing, and I guess all these people have been silenced or they're all dead because nobody alive today knew what Vince was like, life was like before he met his father. his mother lived to be 100 years old. I remember reading that someplace, but there's no resource of what Vincent McMahon's life was like before he went to live with his father.
Yeah, that's a big deal. And they said like there was no info on it, no intel, like
nothing. Weird.
Yeah, it's like he was created in a laboratory one day.
Which is funny. You know, someone said something about Epstein the other day. You guys knew Epstein is, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, thanks.
That he was a creation of the intelligence agency. Like he, like his whole backstory. Like he's this big investor and all this money, yet he has no clients. He has no office where he takes people's money. None of this existed, yet he was an investor. He never invested anybody's money. No one invested with him. There's no office for his investments. Like the whole thing is well,
maybe Donnie, maybe what do you think of this? Maybe Shane McMahon and the kids would have had a better upbringing if Vince didn't work at home. You know, like you hear Cornette tell stories that, you know, Cornette and Pritchard and Vince are sitting on the lanai booking the show all day. You know, maybe home is a place you shouldn't work when you have kids. I don't know. I don't know shit about kids. So.
He never got away from it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. He never got away from it.
And it painted that picture in the documentary, and it's sad.
Yeah, it is. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, like when all these please don't think for one second. The thing I really, when I watched that documentary, I remember saying to myself, like, what did anybody expect? Right in the beginning, it says these interviews were all filmed before all the allegations. So do you think that anybody fresh was going to come out and go, oh, yeah, Vince was a dirty, rotten pervert or whatever? But they all knew. Everyone knew what Vince was up to. Anyone who says that they worked in those walls is completely full of shit. They said, oh, I didn't know Vince was doing that. They all knew it. They all enabled him. They all looked the other way because they were all getting paid handsomely to look the other way.
Even she was getting paid, and all this came to light because she stopped being paid.
Do you guys watch Game of Thrones, or did you ever? Any of you?
No, I watched every episode.
Okay, and the House of the Dragons. Donnie, it's the same thing. It's Vince was the king. It's literally a kingship that people have dealt with, and the king can do anything he wants until he's no longer king, and then he gets exposed for what he did.
Well, no, I know.
Like Dallas, Donnie, remember this? Not remember, but I'll know of it. You couldn't tell Fritz how messed up the Von Erichs boys were, or you'd get fired. You couldn't tell Fritz. Yep. You had this big image of what this the Christian athlete in Dallas, yet they're all problematic, and it was all kept hush hush. Remember the story of Brody flushing David Von Erich's pills down the toilet where they found a dead body? Like,
yep.
So the business had a lot of messed up stuff in it, even way back then. I think it always did. You didn't hear about it.
I'm sure it did. It had to have, but you know, no reason to hear about it. How would you hear about it? There was kayfabe. The business was protected back then. Mm-hmm. Now, anyone with social
everybody wants to be a star now.
Social media, right?
Well, not like that. Just like politicians, like all the women that JFK used to smuggle around, they all kept their mouths shut to protect him. They weren't in it for themselves.
Right. 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 Well, real quick, guys, let me just do a little housekeeping here. So the back seats are on tour right now. So they got December 4th in Little Rock, Arkansas at the Hall for JCW. They're going to have their Lunacy, the March of Madness tour. And that's brought to you by OnlyWrestlers.com. That is RVD and Katie's website. So
they're actually in Arkansas.
Yep. And then here they are in Missouri this December 5th. So two nights in a row coming right up. So check that out, everybody. Go to Juggalo Championship Wrestling on Instagram and follow the boys. Hell yeah. So guys, tonight's show is called Key to the City. And real quick, the reason for that, I said Thanksgiving, I would finally get a chance to see Robbie. And I did, Brian. I saw Robbie at Thanksgiving.
Robbie. And
what?
Robbie.
My brother, Robbie Zicardi, whatever we call him. Robbie Marino, Robbie Illuminati.
Did he have a struggle while he was there?
He was getting sympathy. You know how he gets sympathy.
I'm sure he was. Like the man. Hey, do you think Barry still has his autograph table set up at Donnie's show?
What did you just say? Do I think what?
You know, you heard what I said.
Yeah, but where... All right, back to Robbie.
So you had him at Thanksgiving. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, he was acting like he couldn't even get his own fix his own plate.
Well, what was injured?
His his teeth, his neck, he says. It's a long story. He was in Panama 2 weeks ago getting stem cells in his neck because he said he got hurt by the Buffalo Wild Wing Hank mascot. So anyway, he had issues with the mayor. I have to meet with the mayor this week because Robbie is trying to get the key to the city of Chester as a way of dropping his lawsuit and all this nonsense.
Donnie, are you hearing any of this?
I'm hearing it all. He had to be successful.
He had to get HeliVac off the roof. He's trying to put that bill onto the mayor of Chester. So anyway, I'm meeting with the mayor this week to try to find some way
to put them out
that at our next event we can just get this all behind us. Yeah, because it's getting to be too much. I want to move on and have.
Wait a minute. I just want to hear you tell that money. Part again about the HeliVac. Can you tell about the HeliVac again? He what happened? He had what? Why did he have to get HeliVac?
He didn't have to. He didn't want to go to the Chester Hospital because he said it was subpar. So he had the HeliVac.
It was subpar.
So he had to go to Philly instead, and then. Since it wasn't necessity.
Why was he in the need of emergency medical assistance?
I don't think he really was because he lost the match. So I think it's a long story. You got to go back and watch the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, watch the show.
We'll see what happens. All I'm saying is I have to meet with the mayor and we're trying to get this all behind us. So hopefully we'll have an announcement soon as to how this is all going to work. And when our next date is as well, because that's on the horizon. We're going to be announcing that very soon.
If you get a big key, can I see a picture of it? Like a great big key, like the key to the city. Like remember the Superman movie that gave him the key to the city? It was a great big key.
Yes, we might. Exactly.
Hold on a minute. Your reference for a key to the city reference is an old Superman movie.
Yeah, because that's the only time I remember a great big physical key. Key to the city.
Key to the city. That's it. So yeah, we're going to see what happens. The school kids in Chester might be making the key to hang.
Okay. Oh, that's cool.
So it may have to be a key on a pole or a ladder. So I don't know.
I want to be brought up, after the show's over. I want to be brought up to speed on this whole thing.
I was going to say you were going to be at the last one at Brian, and then Brian, tell the world what happened. You texted me at like 2 p.m. saying, never mind.
I don't even remember. It was a long time ago.
Exactly.
What day of the week was it?
No one knows. So here's what we do have, Brian. A bad area.
Okay.
Do you have one? Let's tell a bad area story. Come on. It's fun. Let's have fun.
Yeah, bad area story.
The last time you were on here, you talked about North Philly.
It wasn't about North Philly.
Yes, it was. It was G and Erie.
Oh, yeah. I got the stereo stolen out of my 93 GT.
So wait, you were inside at the show and someone broke into your car?
Velas's gym was during it was in the afternoon.
It was and what happened? They got in your car and took out the stereo?
I kind of asked for it myself. One of the actuators in my door needed to be replaced, so you couldn't lock the door really well on the one side. It just looked locked, but it wasn't. Someone went around over the door and stole the stereo out of it.
When you could just pull the stereo out?
Well, as they did, they just yanked it out.
Jeez. But they didn't mess anything else up.
No, I mean, it was a big hole in my dash, but it wasn't hard to fix. I just had to buy a new head unit and it was fixed, but it was still, they stole it.
So the worst area you've ever been in, you'd say is North Philly?
No.
Where then? Where's your?
Why? You were right there when I was in the worst area I've ever been to.
Detroit?
Hamtramck, Michigan. Remember there was machine gun bullet holes in the front of the building?
That's right. I forgot about that.
You get buzzed into the bar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's over, dude. That's over. And when I went in the
McDonald's, it was interesting. The McDonald's had bulletproof glass. Where you had to write down what you want on a piece of paper and drop it in the thing, and they made it on the other side. Zach Gallen told us how to get there.
Yes, Zach was with us, I think.
Yeah, there is his prosthetic leg all tangled in my seatbelt. I'm like, oh, my God. He was like 18 years old that day. It was interesting. It's the first time I met Necro Butcher.
Yeah. You're right.
That's what you get for eating McDonald's.
Oh, my gosh. But that you're right, though. I forgot about Zach Gallen being there.
Yeah. The show was all right. I remember the first time I met Necro. Sabu was on it. You guys worked as kids from Rotten's.
I don't remember.
American Kickboxer was there. Remember it?
Oh, yeah.
They had the midget wife and... but he was just as tall as her. Like, it was weird. It was different. I had a good time, I guess. It was a long weekend. I remember that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. Now, when we went to, I don't think it was Detroit, but a couple months ago for Juggalo Championship Wrestling, it was in a bar and it was out back. And I walked into the bar. And the minute I opened up the door, there was a guy sitting at the bar, older man, and he let out the strongest belch that seemed to go on for 10 seconds.
Would you catch an odor out of it too, or was it just a loud belch?
Brian, I just lost it. I just started laughing my ass off. Like, that was the universe telling me, like, welcome. As soon as I walked in, boom. And it was like it made my hair stand on end.
Well, that's something.
So that's that area. That's the bad area. So Phil was supposed to be here tonight. He actually has a light side of the ring. Donnie, you don't have anything, do you? A 50 Shades.
A light side of the ring?
A light side. Yeah, we try to say some good stuff sometimes. Phil has a good one about something about locker room leadership he wanted to talk about. Like, how do you make a locker room leader or something? How does a locker room leader get chosen? You know, he wanted to talk about tonight.
Usually somebody doesn't want to be the leader.
You got to take the locker room leader is the guy who leads by example.
Right. And he usually doesn't want to be the leader.
You know, I'm not putting myself over in any way, shape, or form. So please don't think that. But the reason I always did a speech at the beginning of every one of my shows was to galvanize and unify everyone. Every show I ever did, I did a speech at the beginning. And I always did it, not that I was the leader, but I just wanted everybody on the same page, and I wanted everybody to have the same mission statement for the night and understand it was my chance to tell all the talent on the show how much I appreciated their effort that was going to be forthcoming. I wanted everybody on the same page with any kind of generalized rules that needed to be reinforced. The thing I always despise and hate it is if someone afterwards would say, I didn't know, or nobody said that. That's why if there was any punctuation or anything that needed to be really hit home, I would make it a point. Like, don't fight in the crowd. Whatever it was. This way, nobody could say, I didn't know. Even when we did Contest of Champions, which is 2 years ago this Saturday, I think. 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow, man.
But, I know.
Yeah, bro, that's crazy. But that night, remember, Johnny? I brought everybody in then, and, you know, of course I had to yell at a bunch of people who ate catering that was meant for the main. Remember that?
I was about to tell Brian.
Awesome catering set up.
I had to hear about that.
Hold on. Great catering set up for everybody on the main show. So before the main show, we had like a pre-show with Battle Royal guys and all this other shit. And I remember saying, like,
ticket sellers.
Well, no, they were all young, hungry kids. I have no problem with that.
Yeah,
I specifically said that all this food on this table, this catering, is for the main competitors and the main talent on the show.
Yeah, well, I took it.
The night show. I come in the back and it looked like Grant took Richmond. People were ripping through it. And I was just like, oh my God, dude.
Did you expect them to not take it?
Well, since there was a sign on there that said food for night show talent only. I had to set up if the others wanted something, just ask for it, and I would have got them some.
I can't.
But I knew how many people were on the show, so that's the amount of food I got. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
And even it got to the point where, like, thank God Sting of all people had come to me and said, like, hey, man, can I have some of that? And I'm like, yeah, of course. So, like, he made his two portions, and I remember him saying to me, like, If anybody else needs some, they can have some of mine. I was just like, holy shit, dude. This is the biggest guy, the biggest name ever in the Ocean County ever that I promoted with. And he's telling me right now he'll gladly give some of his catered food to somebody else. I was just like, is this real? And then I had to throw a bunch of people out because the locker room was big, but it wasn't that big. So I had to go around the locker room with my enforcer and just start telling people who clearly weren't on the night show, you have to get out of the locker room. Like, you know.
And so there's people, an actual sense.
And my favorite part was there was an individual in the locker room who was laying on the ground, mid sprawled out, laying on the floor, and people were walking over this individual. I just walked over and I'm like, you have to get out of the locker room. I'm like, what? I'm like, you got to get out of the locker room. They were with somebody. I don't even know who they were. Oh, sorry, man. I'm like, and you're laying on the floor in the middle of the goddamn floor and we're all trying to walk around you. So please leave.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Donnie. Won't happen again.
That's all
right. Right. Hey, everybody. How you doing?
Hey, Philip. Hey. Let Philip take
Phil.
The floor.
Did Welcome. He have any of the cake? Did he take any of the food?
Phil wasn't at the show, but Donnie did say in the locker room speech at the end, and everybody, the catering It's not for.
That just asked for it right there.
Not for the Battle Royal Jabrones.
Now, could you picture a Trent Acid helping himself to that food if he was not, if I can see what I just, it's nice that you did that. It really is. But I just, it's a shame that happens, but I'm not surprised by it, I guess is what I'm saying.
No, it's the old, I remember years ago, we used to eat at Rivoli's Italian restaurant after all the PCW shows. And we went one night and he never would charge us, but all he would ask us for is to tip the waitress generously. Right, no, so I would tell all the boys, if you're eating here for free, leave at least like $5 a head or something, whatever it was. Sure. Everybody would. There were four individuals that were on the show that at the end, they all ate at Rivoli's, and combined total when they left, they didn't leave $1, not a dollar amongst the four of them. And they ate like they were going to the chair. You know what I mean? Like eat at a house and home. So they left. And then I remember saying, like, I covered their tip, but it was just like one of those things. I was like, Jesus, man, I'll tell you who it was off the air. But, it was the night Eddie Guerrero was on the show when we all went to Rivoli's with Eddie.
I assure you,
Eddie left the tip. But we covered Eddie. But no, it was four other guys at the end of the table. And I remember watching it go down. I was like, Jesus, you can't even do this. Like, you can't even. And I paid them all to be on the show. And I think I was asking, like, everybody just throw $5 a head in.
Yeah.
And you're getting like a $30 meal or whatever it was. So.
Yeah.
Frank, sorry about that, Connie.
Frank Kazarian could eat the whole thing. That's one thing I remember, that he could eat the whole thing.
Who could?
Kazarian, he'd eat the whole thing.
Oh, that's right.
He loved it.
I forgot about Rivoli's. That.
Yeah.
Rivoli's was times. Crazy amount of food.
But here's what an insane thing, right?
Food home.
What an insane thing that I had set up. I had accommodations and food for the boys before the show, after the show. I had supplements, free samples of supplements for all the boys with like bags that you would get like at the Academy Awards. That set up for talent. I had a gym. Imagine that. I had a gym set up that any of the talent could work out for free if they came to the show early. Oh yeah, I even had tanning if they wanted to go tanning for free. And I had after show accommodations that they didn't have to pay for to come eat. Like Dennis and Dapper used to tell us, Dapper used to say, you got to come to the restaurant to get paid after the show only because it was he would tell the sponsor, hey, after the show, let me eat for free. I'll get you like 100 people here after the show or whatever. that was his trick. So he would have like somebody like Joe Bob's Italian Restaurant would buy an ad in the ad book and buy a bunch of tickets. And he'd be like, oh, yeah, we'll get you at least 50 people to come here and eat after the show. It was all the boys because he'd tell everybody you got to come there to get paid.
I've been there before.
That's old school promoting right there.
Yeah. I never did that. I just said the guys.
I've gotten many a payday at the after party.
I always got paid from Dennis.
Sometimes Dennis would give us extra money in the bathroom. One time I was in the bathroom.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You're looking here. Don't say nothing no more. Here, take this.
You're right. Right.
Fuck Fred. Say, take this.
Yep. Exactly.
Love it.
So, Phil.
What's going on, buddy?
P.T. Barnum. How's it going?
Doing well. DC traffic sucks. if you didn't know that already.
You don't say.
Yeah. I mean, what I left it. I think John and I had a phone conversation before the show. I think I left 4:15 and I'm just now getting home. So, yeah.
Crazy.
Gotta love it. But I had a question for all of you. I mean, we've all been around a bit. How do you designate or realize who the locker room leader is in a locker room? I have a reason to ask this question, but I kind of want to lead into what for you, like, how do you know that's that person, or how do you define that person, or
you want to take turns?
Donnie.
Yeah, Johnny, please. I'll go first. To me, it was always who your most respected guy in the locker room was one of the hardest workers that led by example, and somebody that you would pick as the shining beacon of your company. For me, if I had guys in a locker room like Nova, Kazarian, Daniels, those would be some of our leaders. Frankie's a leader through silence, through example. Same with CD. He would do a speech if he needed to, or lead. Same with Nova. Again, I'm not with putting CD, myself over.
Chris Daniels.
Yeah. But I would do speeches and do that too. But to me, the locker room leaders are always the guys who led by example. And either they've been to the place that you want to go to, or they're on their way to the place you want to go to. So you want to follow their example. That's my opinion, what a locker room leader is. It's not somebody who raises his hand and says, I'm the locker room leader.
Correct.
To me.
Okay. Johnny, what about you? Would you add anything to that?
Yeah, I'm going to go more metaphysical. I'm going to say it's I don't know how to explain it, but it's an energetic thing. You just know who it is. You know, it's like an alpha. You know, no one's walking around with a shirt that says I'm the alpha here. But there's just something in the air. There's something energetically where you just know without knowing that someone's a leader. And I think that's how it works. I think you just sort of have that energy or you don't. It's like a horse race. It's like watching horses race. One of them's going to break out. And you, it's kind of like an intangibility is what I would think.
Yeah. Brian, what about you?
Interesting question. I would say in my experience, it's generally not the loudest person in the room. It's usually somebody, like Donnie said, that has been the furthest. But almost everything they say or do, they don't speak unless it's important. And when they do speak or do something, it's about the betterment of the group. It's never about the betterment of themselves.
Yes.
The betterment. They look, it's kind of like the conscious of the locker room, the conscious of the office, the person that rarely speaks, but when they speak, it's important. Everyone listens because they rarely speak. It's almost always true, and it's for the betterment of everybody. It's never for the betterment of themselves or one other person. It's like the group's mind and the group's voice speaks.
Yeah.
I had an experience. So this is a light side. You know, I kind of wanted to see, because I know where I'm thinking about, because I agree with all of you, and it's that group consensus. It's sort of who you get drawn to for whatever reason. They work hard. There's somebody who's known. There's somebody who's given that great feedback. There's somebody who's built up a reputation within that team, if it's for like a particular place. I think of a Bruiser at MCW. Who's now passed, but like he was the leader of, he ran their school. So he kind of earned the reputation by leading the students and was telling people more what to do and was giving a lot of that feedback to people. And then, like you said, there's people who've been there, done that, who are giving, you know, feedback or just like attentive. And like, you sort of know, like, okay, they're the guys I'm going to go to if there's a problem or if I am stuck or, you know, whatever it may be. I had an experience at an event where somebody who had never been there before takes the mic from the promoter at the end of a meeting and goes, "Hey, yo, I'm now the locker room leader. So if you have any problems, I want you to come to me. Tell me about it, you know, because we all have to work together." And some of the things he's saying weren't wrong per se, but it was like, I looked at him and I was like, I don't know who you are. I don't know your name. You've not introduced yourself. I've never met you before, which is weird for me in this area. And I'm like, who are you? And later I made a point to go out of my way to introduce myself to him after I'd been there half the day. And like, oh, hey, you're I almost said the name. You're so-and-so, right? And he's like, oh yeah. And I was like, oh, I know you, you're Phil. I was like, yeah. I was like, oh man, I'm so glad you're here. And it was just a weird exchange. And I've seen this person since, and it's happened again. And I'm like, I don't understand this. I've never in my life had somebody go out of their way and be like, yeah, I'm the locker room leader.
That is awesome.
I know somebody, I know Johnny and I know a person that did this place we both worked. There was someone in charge. And then the next person in charge.
You talking about Rebel?
No.
Because Rebel used to go in. Listen, I don't know if you know this, Donnie and Phil, but me and Trent would be in the locker room at certain shows in Pennsylvania that were not Rebel shows. And we would be doing the locker room meeting, and there would be the whole lineup on the board. And he would grab the eraser and just erase the whole board in front of the promoter, in front of the whole locker room. That's, and then go, all right, backseat who you want tonight. And we would say, and he wrote it up there and put us main event and did it all right in front of the promoter, just like that.
I can assure you that never happened on any show that I was booking. He wrestled a couple of Dennis shows, and trust me, old Chucky boy was put in his place.
He did it where he could get away with it. I'll tell you a little story about Rebel. And you remember, Johnny, I don't know if you were there for this. You had to have been. It was Rebel and Tough Enough, Greg Matthews, right?
Yeah.
CZW Arena, the arena in Philadelphia, right? This is right when John started running the monitor in the back where the guys could watch. And this is going to tie all the stories together. You talk about locker room leaders, right? I'm going to blend all this together. It was Barr and Burke against Rebel and Matthews, right? And Wifebeater Matt was out because he had hurt his back. He slipped on the ice, and he had a TENS unit.
Yes, Dave, he was.
On the small of his back. And now Wifebeater hardly ever talks in the locker room. Never makes – but you would know, sure as shit, that's a locker – like he would – you just knew. He very rarely ever acted. If he acted, it was important. Well, we're watching the show, and I'm watching the end of the match. All of a sudden, you see Rebel with a chair smacking Birkenbar in the legs. And, like, the guy, and as you hear this, like, we're all starting to see the monitor more. I'm like, yo, what? There's a problem there. And this is rare. It's rare that this happens that I've seen a lot where guys, it's a shoot fight. Like, there's a shoot problem.
Yeah.
And the music's playing. They're getting him out of the ring. And I said to Matt, there's going to be a problem to come back through here.
Matt is Wifebeater, for people that don't know.
So he's like, well, let's see. Rebel comes back yelling at Birkenbar. And Rebel was always the type that would, let's be honest, he's a man who would take cheap shots on kids in a ring. Chop them, body slam, then chop them in the chest. Like, he would just take liberties because he could get away with it.
Right. Well,
the problem is now these kids are getting bigger.
Right.
They're not 19 anymore. They're getting bigger, physically bigger. Mm-hmm. And it's not funny anymore. Now you're being disrespectful.
Well, let's just cut to the chase. Chuck Williams, the Rockin' Rebel, was one of the biggest pieces of shit to ever walk the earth. I'll say it. If anybody else wants to. Just a terrible human being from the very first time I met him to when he did the unthinkable and killed his wife. That's exactly what he was. He was a turd. He was a useless human being. And there's no one in the history of the world that could defend him to me. I'm sorry that his children had to live through that. That's the most unfortunate thing. But he was a coward. He was a piece of shit. And he was just a rotten human being. So whatever. Take from that what you will. I don't mince
words. I'll finish the story real quick. He comes in the back yelling, "Mom, it's going to be a problem." The first guy in his face is Matt. Chuck's voice went from yelling to quiet almost immediately.
Of course it did.
Then, after he got done with that, now comes the real boss yelling from the steps. John comes down and gets in his face. So at that point then, Rebel lost all the wind at his sail because he was dressed down in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. And who did it? The two locker room leaders, who would never do it unless it was called upon. Like, they didn't need to be told. They just acted.
It was like Game of Thrones. There was a hierarchy, and it spilled, and things trickled down, and everyone knew. And the locker room itself was a synergetic circle that had a mind of its own. You use the word consciousness, Brian. I think that's exactly the word that you should have used.
Yep.
Good analysis, Brian. Well, that's why we have you on here.
Thank you, Gee.
Pirates, when a pirate, the captain of the ship, dies or whatever, the person that sets it up to pick the new pirate or the new captain, do you know who that is? Who handles that? It's the master of arms has a vote. In other words, it's the number two that votes, that picks the new leader. So really, he's the leader, but he's never really the leader. He's always the number two.
Well, I just want to say, Brian, you went 59 minutes on the podcast and you were gold until that last dumb story about the pirates.
About the what?
Congratulations. Pirates. Well, no, it makes sense though, but it's all right.
Way to finish strong, bro.
I'm saying is leadership is given; it's not taken from anybody.
You're right. I'll give you that. And with that, gentlemen, this was a fun hour. It really was. Just shoot the shit.
I made it just in time.
Thank you all. Thank you all for coming.
Next
Stay
Tuesday,
tuned.
Housekeeping note: next Tuesday I won't be unavailable. I'll be at a dinner, so you guys will have to man the ship without me next Tuesday. I'm going.
Thank you, Donnie. Thank you, Phil.
You can take my spot next week.
Brian, I'm booking you right now for next Tuesday.
I'm going to go play the piano.
I just picture the Peanuts song. All right, everybody. Look, he already left. All right. God bless.